That is and remaineth foolishly spoken. For not the child of earth is the center point, cnum hotpe or rech mire, but rather their faith and confident belief. They are all one in that, up the water and down, from the delta to the sixth rapid, the belief in Osiris and his resurrection. For thou must know, not only one single time hath this very great God died and risen, rather, he doth it ever anew, in even ebb and flow before the eyes of the children of Kempt. He goeth down, and cometh forth again mightily, to stand as blessing over the land. Hapi, the strong bull, the river of God. Countest thou the days of the winter time, when the river is small? There are 72 of them, and they are the 72 who were forsworn with Set, the wicked ass, and brought the king to his coffin. But at his hour he goeth forth, the growing, swelling, flooding, the increasing, the Lord of bread, who begetteth all good things and maketh all life, by name Provider of the land. They slaughter the oxen before him. But seest thou then that God and sacrifice are one? For he himself is a bull and an ox before them on earth and in his house. Happy the black, with the sign of the moon on his flank. But when he dieth, he is preserved with balsam, and swaddled, and put away, and is called Osiris Happy.
Lo, then, exclaimed Joseph, hath he also brought it about, like Chnum Hotpe and Rechmire, that he becometh Osiris when he dieth?
I think thou mockest, queried the old man. I see thee little in the glimmering night, but I hear thee, and it seemeth to me very much as though thou mockest. I tell thee, mock not in the land whither I am taking thee, because simply I am travelling that way, and presume not in thy folly against the beliefs of its children, thinking that thou knowest better with thy Ardon. Rather, adapt thyself piously to its customs, otherwise thou wilt be grievously disappointed. I have taught thee somewhat, and initiated thee, and turned a few phrases with thee this evening to my amusement and to pass the time, for I am already old, and sometimes sleep faileth me. I had no other ground to speak with thee. Thou mayest say good night now, that I may try to sleep. But pay heed to thy phrases.
Commanded is as good as done, replied Joseph. But how should I mock, since my lord hath so graciously instructed me this evening, that I may hold out and not come to grief in the land of Egypt, and hath taught the culprit things of which I in my lowliness dreamed not, so new are they to me, and not to be understanded of all. Might I know how I could thank thee, I would. But since I know not, I will do something yet this evening for my benefactor, do that which I would not do, and answer a question before I leave thee, which thou askedst me. I will tell thee my name.
Wilt thou do that? Asked the old man. Do so, or rather, do not so. I have not urged thee to it, for I am old and cautious, and would rather not know what are thy connections, because I must take care not to involve myself therein and be guilty of wrong-doing through the knowledge.
Not at all, Joseph replied. Thou runnest no such danger, but at least thou must know how to call the slave, if thou wilt pass him on into this house of blessing in the city of Amun.
Then what is thy name?
Usarsif, answered Joseph.
The old man was silent. Though only a distance of respect was between them, they were aware of each other but as shadows. It is well, Usarsif, spoke the old man after a while. Thou hast named me thy name. Take thy leave now, for with the sunrise we shall set forth.
Farewell, Joseph saluted him in the dark. May night cradle thee in softest arms, and thy head slumber on her breast, as thy childish head on thy mother's heart. The Temptation. After Joseph had told the Ishmaelite his name in death, and had shown him how he wished to be called in the land of the dead, they all passed on down for some days, several and many, with the greatest placidity and in entire indifference to the time, which some day, as they were aware, by adding to itself, would have done with space, and this the more securely if one did not trouble about it at all, but left it to time, quietly and unobservably, to heap up its progress to large quantities, the while one lived on and only held in the direction of the goal. Their direction was given them by the sea, which spread endlessly away on the right of their sandy route, under a sky fading into mystic distance, now in silver-shot blue calm, now hurling great waves aglitter with foam like strong bulls roaring against the peopled coast. And in the sea the sun went down, the changing, unchangeable, the eye of God, sometimes a clear glowing and solitary orb, which made as it sank a gleaming path across the endless water to the shore and to passers-by who worshipped as they went, but sometimes, too, in the heart of a splendor of gold and rose that worked still more adoring conviction in the soul of the worshipper. But his soul might sometimes be saddened, too, or oppressed by fears, when the deity enveloped himself in threatening mists or clouds suffused with lurid light. He rose, however, not on an open horizon, but behind the heights and hills that hid the view on their left. Between shore and mountains spread the immediate inland, with cultivated fields, wells scattered through the rolling expanse, and orchards adorning the terraced hills. Often our travelers took their way through it, at a distance from the sea, and some half a hundred ells above its glassy surface, passing through the federation of fortified hill cities. Gaza in the south, Khadati, the strong citadel, was head of the league. The walled white cities, fringed with palm, crowned the hilltops. The mother cities, refuge of the inhabitants of the land. The citadels of Sarnim. And on the level ground before the village, and at its heart, the square before the gate of the crowded city with its temples, the Midianites spread out their wares and offered to the people of Ekron, of Jabne, of Ashdod, their merchandise from beyond the Jordan. Joseph performed the office of clerk. He sat and set down with his brush countless petty transactions with the hard-bargaining children of Dagon, fishermen and boatmen, trade folk, and mercenaries from the citadels in their copper armor. Usarsif, the literate young slave, labored to pleasure his good master. The heart of the young chattel beat higher day by day. Not hard to guess why. He was not formed to drift content with sensuous impressions alone, but must make a mental picture of the place where he was, and its relation to other places. He knew that he was taking, in leisurely, time-consuming fashion, a parallel route, some field lengths farther west and in reverse direction, the same journey which he had covered riding on poor Huldah to meet his brothers. He was going toward, if also past, his home. Soon the point must be reached, for he had covered the distance, and was separated from the paternal hearth by a space not more than half the length of the whole journey. Somewhere not far from Ashdod it would be, seat of Dagon, the fish god, whom they worshipped hereabouts, a busy settlement, 2 hours from the coast, and connected with it by a road crowded with people, ox-carts, and teams of horses, all making terrific din. The coast road down to Gaza, as Joseph knew, curved more and more westwards, so that the distance from the mountainous interior increased with each day they traveled. He also knew that they would be passing by noon under the heights of Hebron. Therefore it was his heart beat so anxiously as temptation knocked. Here, and on the slow road beyond to Ascalona, the rocky citadel. He knew the contours of the countryside. They were entering Cephala, the lowland, running along the coast, but his Rachel eyes sought out and dwelt pensively on the mountain ranges, which looked down on the east and formed the second, higher, valley-furrowed level of the land of the Philistines. Behind again, and ever steeper, the world rose toward the east and into the highlands above sea level, rougher, harsher ground, to pastures unpeopled by the lowland palm and upland meadows on whose short grass grazed sheep, grazed Jacob's sheep. Could it be? Up there Jacob was sitting, despairing, dissolved in tears, in God-sent, God-suffering agony, in his hands the blood-spotted sign of Joseph's death and mangling, while down here, under his feet, from one city of the Philistines to the next, marched Joseph, the stolen one, dumb, making no sign, past his own place, with strangers, down to Sheol, into the house of bondage and of death. How near lay the thought of flight, how the urge to it pulled and tugged at his limbs, how his thoughts worked in him to half-resolves, and even to visions of their tempestuous realization. They came, these visions, especially at evening, when he had bade the good old man, his owner, good night. For that he had daily to do. It was one of his duties. He had to wish the Ishmaelite pleasant dreams at the day's end, and always in choice and varied phrases. Otherwise, the old man would say he knew that one already. Especially then, in the darkness, when they lay camped before a city of the Philistines, and his companions were wrapped in slumber. The boy who had been ravished away was ravished anew by longings to be off up the orchard-clad hills in the dark, on over heights and gullies, 8 miles and furlongs of ground, for more it probably was not, and Joseph would easily find the right direction as he climbed, on into the mountain land, into Jacob's arms, to dry his father's tears with the words, "Here am I," and once again to be his darling. But did he carry all this out and flee? We know that he did not. He reconsidered, sometimes just on the verge, put away temptation, gave up the idea, stopped where he was. When all was said and done, it was at the moment more sensible. Flight in itself meant great perils. He might perish, might fall among robbers and murderers, be devoured by wild beasts. Yet it is not doing justice to his renunciation to attribute it to our human tendency to indolence instead of action. In his career, we know that Joseph renounced a physical act far sweeter than a wild escape over the mountains would have been. No, the renunciation, which in both cases followed on the violent temptation, came from a point of view quite peculiar to Joseph. Put into words, it was something like this: "How could I commit such a folly and sin against God?" In other words, he had insight into the mad and sinful error that would lie in escape, the clear and intelligent perception that it would have been a clumsy blunder to try to destroy God's plan through flight. For Joseph was penetrated by the certainty that he had not been snatched away to no purpose, that rather the planning intelligence which had rent him away from the old and led him into the new had plans for him in one or another way, and to kick against the pricks, to shrink from the affliction, would have been a great sin and error, these being one and the same in Joseph's eyes. The conception of sin as blunder, as clumsy offense against God's wisdom, was right native to him, and life so far had extraordinarily strengthened him therein. He had made mistakes enough. He learned that in the pit. But now he had escaped from the pit, and was obviously being taken away according to plan. So the mistakes committed up to now might be considered as lying in the plan itself, as purposeful and God-guided in all their blindness. But any more of them, as now, for instance, escape, would be very distinctly evil. It would literally mean to wish to be wiser than God, which, according to Joseph's shrewd insight, was quite simply the height of folly. The darling of his father once again? Ah, no, for he was always that. But now it would be so in a new sense, one he had always longed for and dreamed of. Now, since the experience of the pit, it was his to live in a new and higher state of being chosen and preferred, in the sense and the bitter savor of the myrtle wreath, which was set apart for the set apart, and reserved for the reserved. The torn garland, the adornment of the whole sacrifice, he wore it anew, no longer in prophetic play, but in very truth and in the spirit. Should he now, for the sake of the blind urge of the flesh, betake himself to his own? So foolhardy, so lacking in all divine wisdom, Joseph was not. In the last moment he was not so blind as to fling away the advantage of his state. Did he know, or did he not, the feast in all its hours? The center of the present and of the feast, was he or was he not? The garland in his hair, should he run from the feast to be once more with his brothers, a shepherd of the flocks? The temptation was strong in his flesh, but weak in his spirit. Joseph resisted. He went on with his owners, on past Jacob and out of his neighborhood. Usarsif, the swamp-born, Joseph M. Heb, to speak Egyptian, which is to say, Joseph in the feast.